Go.
Yes. I'll start again. Are all religions the same? This is one of a series of questions we're looking at evening worship. Last week it was, why does a good and loving God allow suffering? This week, are all religions the same? Next week, what about sex and marriage? Ooh. Okay. And Nikki's giving the talk next week, okay? So, are all religions the same? What do Christians think about this question? Actually, I've split it into four questions. This thing never works when you want it to. I think it's something because of... Oh, something's happened there. Nope. No, it's not working, Derek. Yay. I've split it into these four questions, okay? Because these are similar ways of saying the same thing, and you find them these days. You can counter them in conversations, you can counter them in books, you can counter them on the media and the news. Surely it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere. Surely you don't have to be a Christian to be good. Are we not all worshipping the same God? If Jesus is the only way, what about those who have never heard? Hands up if someone's ever asked you one of those questions. See? These are the ways, that it's the are all religions the same question, but this is the way it comes out. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at these questions in turn, and then wee bit of question and answer if anybody's got anything pressing they want to ask me about what I've been saying, and then we're going to have some prayer time. Okay? I'm just flagging that up now. Have some prayer time. And then we'll sing a song, because it's lovely to have Alex leading worship, and why waste the moment? Okay? So let's have a look at that first question. Can we have the next one up, please, Derek? Is it Derek? Yes. Surely it doesn't matter. Thank you. Sorry, John. Thank you, John. Do apologize. Sure, it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere. When Lindsay and I were in Pakistan, we spent a couple of years living in a village, as most of you know. It was a Hindu village, and one of the... there were three bhagats in the village. A bhagat is a devotee. Bhagati means devotion. And so if you're a bhagat, that means you've actually committed to following a guru and you become their disciple. So there were three of them. They're all brothers, actually. And one of them was called Bijal Bhagat, which means he was the fifth son, but he was also a bhagat, a bhakti devotee. And he was a really lovely guy, really lovely guy. He was sort of that shaped, you know? And he smiled and chuckled a lot. And his wife smiled and chuckled a lot too. And I used to go around and sit there and have cups of tea and talk Hindu philosophy for hours. And I got really, really well with him. And once a year, as part of his devotion, he would spend a lot of money having something called a satsang, which is a sort of, it's an all-night praise. I don't think they had prayer as part, but it's all-night praise and prayer night. A bit like what we have, but very different, obviously. So he'd have an all-night satsang, which he'd pay for. He'd invite guests, and they'd come from miles around. All the people who were part of the same sect that he was involved in would come, but also all the neighboring villagers would come. And they'd have a massive feast, and then he'd employ singers, religious singers, to come in. They'd sing all night, and then in the morning, he'd make a sacrifice to his goddess. And it didn't start then. It started 2 months before that. 2 months before that, he would start to fast. And he'd fast for a month. He'd be down to one meal a day for a month. And then when he had a month to go, he would stop eating altogether. And he'd just be on liquids for the first 3 weeks of the second month. And then for the last 10 days of the second month, nothing. Total fast. And he'd fast until the night of the satsang, and then he'd watch everybody else eat and drink lots of cups of tea, and he'd sit up through the night as part of his devotion, and only after everybody else had left in the morning, and only after he'd made his offering to his goddess, would he have anything to eat. So that's devotion for you. And there was no doubting his sincerity. Okay? Surely it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you are sincere. We had lots of interesting conversations because, you see, just because you're sincere doesn't necessarily mean you're right. You can sincerely believe that Hibs are the best football team in the world. And I'm sure there are people in this church tonight who believe that. And there's no doubt in their loyalty and their devotion. But see, there's a difference between sincerity and truth. I'm on dodgy ground here. I'll move quickly on. See, you can be sincere, but you can be sincerely wrong. I mean, Hitler is very sincere. Or maybe that's open to debate. There's a Hindu saying, all roads lead to God. And they sincerely believe that. But actually, stop and think about that for a minute. It's a bit like saying, all roads lead to the Grace Mount Chippy. Now, if you're really hungry and you want to get to the Grace Mount Chippy, you don't go down Kirk Bray heading towards the centre of town. Because if you do, you won't get to the Grace Mount Chippy. You don't head across the Braids. I mean, you might eventually come round the other way, but if you're really hungry and you want to go to the Grace Mount Chippy, there's only one road that will take you there. You see what I'm saying? There's the logic of all roads lead to God, which Hindus sincerely believe, doesn't actually work. Some roads will take you, you know, you could be driving very sincerely down Kirk Bray, thinking, I really am going to get to the Grace Mount Chippy this way, but it wouldn't work. We could be observing all the rules of the highway code, you know, but you still wouldn't get to the Grace Mount Chippy. To get to the Grace Mount Chippy, there's only one way, especially if you're in a hurry. So there's a flaw there in the logic. All roads don't necessarily. Some will take you vaguely in the right direction. Some will take you in completely the wrong direction. Let's have a look at the second slide. Surely you don't have to be a Christian to be good. Surely you don't have to be a Christian to be good. Hands up if you think that's true. Of course it's true. How many people you know who are good who are not Christians? I know lots. There used to be a family who ran news agents over there. They've since moved to Fife. And they were called the Muhammads, and they were lovely. They suffered horrendous racism. They used to live up in Gracemount in St. Catherine's Crescent on the corner there, and they used to get all sorts of stuff tipped into their garden. And the way they struggled with all of that, they struggled with it with dignity, and it didn't make them bitter somehow. It was wonderful. They used to employ local lads to deliver their newspapers. And they were a lovely couple. And I remember when Catherine Haith's mum died, she used to buy newspapers at their shop. They sent around flowers. You know, good, honest, nice, kind people. So no, you don't have to be a Christian to be good. But you see, there's an issue behind that question. There's an assumption behind that question. Surely you don't have to be a Christian to be good. And that the assumption behind that question is that religion is about being good. You notice that? It's about being good. Let's have the next slide up. There you go. That's the assumption behind that question. That being religious means being good, and you're sort of climbing the stairs of goodness. Every old lady you help across the road, you get a bit higher. Every, I don't know, nice thing you do, you get a bit higher. But there's an assumption behind that that God is only interested in good people. And so if you're good enough, you'll connect with God. And once you've connected with God, you're sorted. So that's the sort of assumption that's behind that question. Surely you don't have to be a Christian to be good. If you're a follower of Jesus, there's two things you will know for certain. And they completely contradict what I've just been saying about what religion's all about. If you're a follower of Jesus, you'll know these two things for certain. The first thing you'll know is that you will never be good enough for God. You will never, ever, ever be good enough for God. And the second thing you'll know is that it was while we were still sinners that Jesus died for us. So, being a Christian is not about climbing that ladder of goodness. Being Christian is about going down instead of going up. Let's have the next slide, John. This is a slide that David Smith uses a lot, and I find it very helpful. Being a Christian is about going down. Down on your knees, humbling yourself, heading down the way rather than up the way. It's about admitting who you are and going to the cross. Because you see, Christianity is not about us reaching up for God. Christianity is about God reaching down to us. That's what the cross is all about. Next question. I'm zipping through these, as you can see. I'm just trying to cover all the bases. Are we not all worshipping the same God? I want to read to you. If you've got Pew Bibles, look up page number 1144. And it'll be 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And it's Paul. And he's writing about how Christianity, how neither the Jews or the Greeks can make sense of Christianity. Because it just doesn't fit any of their ideas of what it means to be religious. 1144. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning at verse 20. So, there he is. Christianity has just exploded into the world. The world it's exploded into is a world dominated by two main religious philosophies. Greek religious philosophy and Jewish religious philosophy. Both with their great lengthy traditions. And when I read this passage, I'm always reminded of two blocks of world religions. There's a sort of Judeo-Islamic tradition, and there's the Hindu stroke, Buddhist stroke, everything else tradition. And the Greek philosophy is very similar. It's dualist. It's very similar to Hinduism and Buddhist philosophy. And the Jewish faith is very similar to Islam, based on rules and covenant and all that sort of stuff. Okay? So, in a sense, here, Paul is writing about how Christianity makes no sense to the whole of the world religions, because those two blocks cover all the world religions, all the main ones. So he says, where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Greeks were very, very scholarly, and they were known for their philosophy. Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand miraculous signs. Greeks look for wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews, foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. Are we not all worshipping the same God? Well, it depends on your point of view. From God's point of view, obviously we are, because he's God, and he hasn't changed, and he doesn't change his coat depending on who's worshipping him. So from God's point of view, obviously we're all worshipping the same God, or we're all trying to worship the same God. But from our point of view, the God we think we're worshipping is actually very, very different. For example, if you're a Muslim, you'd be worshipping a God who is very strict and very holy and very pure and very distant and has very strict rules, and you've got to keep to them or you'll be dishonoring him. And as I said, Judaism and Islam tend to come from the same fold. If you look at some of the things the Pharisees said about God around about Jesus' day, you find similar things. If you're a Hindu, that's the other block, you wouldn't be quite sure. You wouldn't be quite sure what God's going to do next, because your God has many faces, many forms, and you've just got to sort of do what you can and hope for the best. He might be in a good mood. He might be in a bad mood. He might be asleep. He might be awake. He might be quite mischievous and trick you. And you're not quite sure. But you just do your best. Just do your best. Now, what sort of a God do we worship? See, both Islam and Hinduism are trying to work out what God's like. They're sort of looking up and thinking, I wonder what God's like. Well, what does it say? You know, all that sort of stuff. We don't have to do that because God has made himself known to us in Jesus, and we know what he's like, and he's none of those things. So are we all worshiping the same God? Well, from God's point of view, yes, we're all trying to worship him. But from our point of view, well, it depends. The God that I worship is the God made known in Jesus. He's very different from a Muslim's God. He's very different from a Hindu's God. The God I worship is foolishness to Hindus. And he's a stumbling block to Muslims because he came down and died for us. He's the God of the cross. The Muslims have a real problem with Jesus dying. Jesus was a good man. How could he possibly die? Next question. Next slide. If Jesus is the only way, what about those who have never heard? Have you ever thought that yourself? Hands up if you've ever thought that. Just be honest, it's fine. It's a good question to ask. If Jesus is the only way, what about those who have never heard? If Jesus is the cure, what about those who have never heard of the cure? And I don't mean a band there. Something that's confusing images going through my mind. Three things to say, very simple things to say here. First of all, it's not our job to decide who and who God is not going to or going to let into heaven. That's not our job. If we make that our job, it's like saying we're God. So it's not our job to decide from a distance, oh, well, they've never heard. Sorry. That's not our job. That's God's job. The second thing, the God I know in Jesus is a God who's both loving and just. So I don't think he's going to do anything that's unjust, and I don't think he's going to do anything that's unloving. And that's all I need to say there, because it's not my job to make any decisions about people who've never heard. But I do have complete confidence that the God I know and love in Jesus will never do anything that is unjust and unloving. And the third thing, our job is to make sure people have a choice. That's our job. Next slide. Are all religions the same? Here's a final angle on this. We live in a secular society, and you may have noticed that secular institutions don't like religions. Secular institutions tend to think of religions as a problem. Oh, we better accommodate them. Secular religions do think, secular world, secular society does think all religions are the same. And to think all religions are the same is a bit like saying they're all equally useless. I mean, imagine someone saying all medicines are the same. All medicines are the same. It's a bit like saying they're all equally useless. Imagine you cut your finger and it's infected. And you go to a doctor and say, doctor, doctor, which medicine shall I take? And the doctor says, doesn't matter, all medicines are the same. What's the doctor saying? He's saying, all medicines are useless. Well, he's either saying that or he's saying all medicines work really, really well, which is complete nonsense. Some medicines don't work at all. Like my mother, my grandmother, used to think that butter cured everything. If you cut your finger, whoa, butter, slap. Now wrap it in a bandage, it'll be fine. Well, guess what? Sometimes it wasn't. And if it was, it was nothing to do with the butter. So some cures, they don't make any difference. Some cures are worse than useless. Like, if you cut your finger in Pakistan, guess what people do? Let's put some dirt on that. Why? Well, it'll stop the bleeding. Okay. But if you think that's ridiculous, go back a couple hundred years. People used to bleed people to cure them. Oh, I haven't been bled yet. I'm not feeling good. Oh, hang on, I'll bleed you. Whoa. Oh, dear, it doesn't bear thinking, does it? So some cures aren't just useless. They're worse than useless. They make things worse. Whereas some cures, like antibiotics, penicillin, whatever, actually are better. Now, if you think of sin as a sort of spiritual disease, a spiritual infection, are all religious cures the same? No. Some of them don't make any difference whatsoever. Some of them, come on in. Oh, hi, David. Some of them don't make any difference whatsoever, a bit like the butter. Some of them make things worse, a bit like the dirt. And some of them actually work well. There's only one that I know works. A bit like the antibiotics. Yeah. Are all religions the same? Like, if you see someone dying of septicemia, are you going to say, all religions are the same? I've got some dirt, I've got some butter, I've got some antibiotics. No, you're not. You're going to say, I've got a cure. We are in a world where people are dying because of their sins. What are we going to say to them? Just, if it works for you, try it out. No, we know something that works. No, we can't force people to take medicine, but we can give them the choice. Hey, it's worked for me. Okay? Final slide. Conversation starters. Because you probably all know people who come from these major world religions. There are an awful lot of Buddhists around these days. You'd be surprised how many Buddhists. It's funnily enough, why is it that everybody who studies psychology ends up saying they're a Buddhist? It's a weird thing. Now, that's an exaggeration, of course. But maybe it's something to do with being, I don't know, I won't go down that road. But there are a lot of Buddhists, there are a lot of covert Buddhists, which is people who like to be Buddhists but aren't really Buddhists because they quite like a bacon sandwich. You know, there's all that sort of thing. Most Indians that you meet will be Hindus in Edinburgh. Most, like the Kalpana restaurant that's run by Hindus. Most Bengali restaurants are, they'll be Muslims. They're run by Bengalis from Bangladesh. Most shop owners tend to be Muslims. It's just a sort of cultural thing. Once you're in a certain network, then it sort of perpetuates itself. So it's very likely you will bump into people who are Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims, and Jews every week, if not every day of your lives. So, how do we tell them that we've got a miracle cure? Okay, because that's what this is about. How do we tell them? The first thing to I always say to people is to ask yourself, is this conversation actually genuine? You know, it's very easy to get into an argument with someone who believes something completely different from you. But to me, that's not a genuine conversation. That's just an argument. That's just, oh, I'm better than you, or I'm right and you're wrong. You know, and that is totally counterproductive when it comes to telling people about the miracle cure. So you've got to actually discern. If you find yourself in a conversation, you've got to actually discern, is this a genuine conversation? Is there genuine interest here? And if there's no genuine interest, if it's just a sort of scoring points off each other, then talk about the football or something else. The way it's the chippy, I don't know. If there is a genuine interest, then here are some starters. If the person is Jewish, then point to the Old Testament, because we believe that the Old Testament, that Jesus is a fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy about the Messiah. And let the Old Testament speak for you. If people are genuinely interested, they will genuinely look into it. And then they'll come to you with questions, and you can answer them as best you can. Or you can find a book that will help them answer. I brought some books along, actually. This is one for Muslims. It's called The Torn Veil. Gulshan Esther was someone who was very severely handicapped and was healed completely independently of any Christian. She was in a room. She'd heard about Jesus, because most Muslims hear about Jesus in the Quran, and in the Quran it says Jesus is the healer, and she was absolutely desperate. Absolutely desperate. And she prayed, Jesus, heal me. And she felt his presence in the room, and she found she could walk. And she's written a book. You see, if you're talking to a Muslim, then tell them about Jesus in the Quran and get them to read about him. If they're genuinely interested, they will. And then if they've got any questions, they can come back to you. If you're talking to a Hindu, the thing about talking to Hindus is they'll agree with everything you say. Oh yeah, I believe in Jesus. I also believe in Krishna. I also believe in Shiva. I believe in Parvati. I believe in Kali. I believe in Lakshmi. You know, it's completely opposite from talking to a Muslim. Muslims, oh no, I don't believe in Jesus at all. I don't believe he's the Son of God. No, no, Muhammad is God's prophet and him alone. You know, talking to Hindus, oh yeah, I believe in him. What's next? So the idea when it comes to talking about Hindus, say, is to challenge their understanding of time itself. Because the whole Hindu philosophy is based on a cyclical concept of time. And from that springs the whole caste system, and from that springs the whole hierarchy, and the idea of good works, and living a good life in this life so you can move up a level in the next life, because life goes round and round in circles. You know, the whole thing's to do with their concept of time. So if you want a conversation started where people really will begin to understand the difference, talk about time. Because Christians, along with Jews and Muslims, believe in linear time. You know? It has a beginning and it has an end, and Jesus is there in the center of it all. And there's no second chances. So it's a very different understanding of time. And God's kingdom will come on earth and as it is in heaven. Hinduism and Buddhism, oh, well, you know, if you don't manage this time, you've all got another chance next time round. It's very cyclical, and it's very different. And that's why it's very difficult to actually get into a conversation which is meaningful. But there, start with time. Buddhism, start with suffering. Because in Buddhism, Buddhism's all about escaping the suffering of this present life. Whereas we believe that God entered into this present life and suffered along with us. It's very, very different. And we believe that this world is something that we need to change. That this world is real. And that we have a God-given responsibility to change it and do something about suffering. Okay? So there's some conversation starters. Now, I said that I'd give you time. Oh, I brought some other books along. Here's Michael Green's book, very good book, But Don't All Religions Lead to God? And here's Searching Issues, which is the series that we're doing at the moment. So not only can you read it here about other religions, but you can also get a preview about what Nikki's going to say about sex and marriage next week. Okay. We're going to spend some time praying. Does anybody have any questions?